From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White, and a good Tuesday morning to you. If you haven't already filled out the 2020 census, you could have someone knocking on your door to help fill out the questionnaire. 500,000 census takers are hitting the streets starting today. So if you don't want them showing up on your doorstep, really, the advice is to fill out your census now. Here to talk more about how the once-in-a-decade survey is conducted, as well as where we are in terms of completion rates compared to other states or even other cities, is Marna Davis. She's the media relations specialist for the U.S. Census Bureau in Northern California. And Marna, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So help us understand. The census typically has till the end of October, or at least that was the deadline for the 2020 census, but that's been moved up to the end of September. It was cut off by a month. Help us understand how we got to this point.
We got to this point due to COVID-19. All of the operations had to be adjusted due to the pandemic. So operations were adjusted due to that. The Census Bureau asked for an extension through next year so that we could count everyone. Didn't seem like we were going to get it, so we moved up operations for the last day to respond being September 30th so that we could analyze all the data.
It seems like you would want to add time, not subtract time because of the pandemic, to give, you know, social distancing a chance and all of that sort of thing. So what was the thought behind removing a month?
It was actually going to be extended due to the pandemic. It didn't appear that that was a possibility. So operational adjustments were made so that everyone could be counted by the end of September, because it'll take a few months to analyze all of the data.
Okay. And can Congress step in and push that back?
They can. It didn't appear that that was going to happen in time. And so the October 31st date, which was already going to be an extension, originally before COVID, it was the end of counting people was going to be August 31st. So everything got moved back for a little ways, then moved forward. And so now it's September 30th.
I see. Okay.
It's the last day to respond. And they're still, and we're asking everybody, please respond now. You can do it online, by phone, or by mail. And for those households that have not yet responded, census takers are now visiting more than 57 million households across the United States to conduct a census at their doorstep from social distance. And all census takers will be wearing masks. But to avoid a census taker coming to your household, you can still respond online by phone.
Right. Yeah. So there's 500,000 of them, or 500,000, whichever way, you know, six of one, has half dozen of the other. Where are they headed today? Like, what are their marching orders?
Across the United States, homes. The census takers work in the communities in which they live, so they're familiar with the neighborhoods. And homes that have not yet responded, they go to the door and they knock.
Okay. Marna, I'm just going to ask you, the way that you're holding your phone, it gets muffled a little bit, and I just want to make sure you have some really important stuff to say, and I just want to make sure you're conscious of how you're holding your phone.
Okay,
great. So where is California in terms of the response rate compared to the rest of the country?
California is a little ahead of the national response rate. Overall in California, 64.7% of households have responded to the 2020 census. Nationally, it's 63.3%. And in Sacramento County, it's a little bit higher than that. So the California response rate is 64.7%, and Sacramento County is 70.1%.
Oh, well, rah-rah Sacramento County. We're doing pretty well. So that still leaves 3 out of 10 people in Sacramento County, and even more than that in other areas that have yet to fill out the form. What happens if those people don't?
If they don't fill out the form, then a census taker will come to your house several times. and leave a note saying, please respond online by phone or by mail. Other than that, we use administrative records to determine the population count, and we also interview neighbors as to population count.
What happens if there's not a home? What happens if a person is homeless?
If a person is, well, the Census Bureau devotes 3 days to counting people who are experiencing homelessness. Checks in place are ensured that people aren't counted more than once. And this follows, you know, months and years of outreach and coordination with the local census office, partners, shelter directors, service providers. So it's a three-day operation. September 22nd, we will count people who are in shelters. September 23rd, counting people at soup kitchens, mobile soup vans. And September 24th, outdoor areas, encampments on the streets, etc.
So it's really difficult to count every single person, as somebody with the census knows, right? And it gets more difficult the bigger we get. What do you think of the argument that a true random sampling of the U.S. population would be a more accurate way than the way the census is currently performed?
Well, the U.S. Census Bureau is mandated by the Constitution to do a population count every 10 years, and they've been doing it since 1790, and so they adjust every single, you know, decennial census to get the most complete and accurate count. The goal of the census is to count every person once and only once and in the right place. And operational adjustments are made all of the time to make sure that we get the most accurate count of everyone in the U.S. and five territories every 10 years. It's so critical for communities. You know, census numbers are used to determine how hundreds of billions of dollars per year are allocated to communities for roads and schools and emergency response and fire departments and police departments and homeless services and senior services. So it really does affect your community for the next 10 years. And especially we've got some areas like Roseville and Elk Grove that have grown so much over the past 10 years. So a complete and accurate count is critical for the shaping the futures of communities for the next decade.
And that is for, you know, to get roads into those areas and that sort of thing. If you all of a sudden you realize there are many more people living, say, to the east of Sacramento than there were before, you know that the federal government anyway knows that resources need to shift that way.
That is exactly what needs to happen. And what's interesting about shifting east of Sacramento is one of the highest self-response rates in the nation is in Lincoln, 81.1%. So when you figure that overall Sacramento County is 70.1%, which is, you know, one of the higher ones in the state, Lincoln has an 81% self-response rate. You start going a little bit more east to Truckee and Lake Tahoe, and the response rates are really low. Truckee's 32.6%. We've got some areas around Lake Tahoe where the self-response rate is only 12 and 15%. So if any listeners are in the Lake Tahoe area, please respond to the census now.
Yeah, that is exceptionally low. What is it about the demographics of Lincoln that has people filling out the forms?
Demographics, well, there's kind of some, the census did a study a couple years ago about like barriers and attitudes and actually motivators. So a study on some barriers that prevent people from responding to the census, concerns about data privacy, maybe fear of repercussions. Young people believe also like lack of efficacy. Young people believe they're least likely to believe it matters if they count. But motivators are funding for public services such as schools and healthcare and fire departments and police departments and roads and highways. So those are some of the barriers and motivators on what gets people to respond to the 2020 census.
So every now and again, I'll see census updated numbers, like this one comes from 2018 or, you know, that sort of thing. How does that work when the census takes place every 10 years? Where do these other numbers come from through in between that time?
The census does surveys all the time, kind of getting a snapshot of America. So the decennial census is the overall population count that happens every 10 years. And there are a number of community, American Community Survey, and a number of surveys that the Census Bureau does on an ongoing basis.
So what or who decides what aspects of us end up on the census form?
The Census Bureau decides the questions that are on the 2020 census. And this one is just 10 simple questions. It takes only just a few minutes to respond, you know, very simple things, you know, name, age, race, gender, do you own or rent? It's just a few simple and easy questions. If you can do it on your cell phone, it really, if it's one person, it'll probably take you 3 to 4 minutes to do it.
And so those questions have changed over the years, and those changes have always come from the Census Bureau. They don't need approval through Congress or the president. I know the president did weigh in this last time around. That did not end up getting on the census, but it's solely in the hands of the census?
In the Commerce Department, which is over the Census Bureau.
Oh, okay. So the Commerce Department and the Census Bureau decide which questions are on there.
Yes.
And so when you start to get this close to the end, what are your biggest concerns with the 2020 census? What keeps you up at night, I guess?
I just want a complete count for the community that I live in. I want Sacramento and California to respond to the census to ensure funding for the next. I'm, you know, like everyone else, I just want a great community for where I live. You know, I live in West Sacramento. Ours is a little bit lower at 69% self-response rate. I'm working with the public information officer with the city to do everything we can to just make sure that everyone is counted, to know that their answers are protected and encrypted and confidential. Your answers are only used to create statistics. And no information about you, identifiable information about you or your household, is ever shared with any other government agency, including the IRS or law enforcement. It's the Census Bureau is purely a statistical agency to produce numbers to determine how funding is dispersed across the nation, and also congressional representation.
Right.
So your answer, it's easy. It only takes a couple minutes to respond. It's safe. Your answers are protected, encrypted, never shared with any other government agency. And it's important because it determines how hundreds of billions of dollars are allocated to communities. And these are the numbers that are going to be used for the next 10 years. So when you think about roads and schools and emergency response and hospitals, especially during a pandemic, we want every single person to be counted. So I'm so passionate about that. And it really does help communities for everyone to respond.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to respond.
Marna, one quick last question. Is California or Nevada in danger of losing representation in Congress?
I'm not going to anticipate those things. I'm just here to encourage people. I can't anticipate the numbers of, you know, what's going to happen
the 6th. Understandable, yeah. Yes. Okay, Marna Davis, Media Relations Specialist for the U.S. Census Bureau here in Northern California and a West Sacramentan. Thanks for joining us, Marna.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and up next, we'll speak with somebody from the Pew Research Center about the history of the census and how it's changed over the years. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. And our focus today, the big conversation, is the 2020 census. Once every 10 years, the Census Bureau sets out to count every person in the United States and asks a basic set of questions. The number of people staying in the residence, what type of residence you live in, if you own or rent, your name, sex, date of birth. You're also asked if you're Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin. Following that question, you're then asked what your race is. The race question in the census has evolved a lot over the years. It shows the way those in the government have viewed people of color and how that has changed since 1790. A few weeks ago, President Trump issued a memorandum excluding, in his words, illegal aliens from the apportionment base following the 2020 census. The president also tried and failed to add a citizenship question to the census. Here to talk about this history is Devera Cohn. She is a senior writer and editor at Pew Research Center. She studies and writes about demographics in the U.S. and is well-versed in the census. Devera, welcome to Insight. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So a recent article that you co-authored talks about the ramifications of President Trump's memorandum. Could you explain how this would affect the redistribution of seats in the House of Representatives?
Yes, and good for you for knowing that the memo only applied to the apportionment base. It's not to the entire census. So what the apportionment base is, it's the number of people who are counted for purposes of dividing up seats in Congress. And the number of seats is capped at 435. So even if every state is growing, the states that are growing faster will be the ones that will get the extra seats. And there have been some projections that have been done as to how population change might affect that distribution. And in fact, among both Republican and Democratic pundits, I guess you'd say, there's general agreement that California is at risk for losing a seat in Congress for the first time since it became a state. Mm. And that's because other states are growing faster. Now, in addition to that, if the president is successful in excluding unauthorized immigrants from the total count, California might lose an additional seat that it would be entitled to if only population change were taken into account. Our own projections, again, based on what we know about the number of unauthorized immigrants in the country, which we've done estimates of, show that Florida and Texas also would lose a seat or would not gain a seat that they would otherwise be entitled to under the kind of population change that everyone is anticipating. Mm-hmm. And then other states would gain those seats. So it's a bit of a mixed bag as far as impact on states with different red and blue profiles.
Yeah. Devera, I have to give credit to our producer, Cynthia Lopez, who wrote that apportionment-based portion of my script. So she gets credit for me knowing that. Is it possible to use census data to exclude undocumented immigrants when redistributing House seats? Can that be done?
I don't know. It's the Bureau, Census Bureau says that it will be studying the methods by which it might try to arrive at an estimate of the Census Bureau does not regularly issue these kinds of estimates. They don't have any kinds of totals. So they would have to get it from scratch. So they're looking into doing that. Meanwhile, there have been lawsuits filed challenging the president's memo, saying that that the Constitution and other laws provide for including everybody in that calculation. Mm-hmm.
So the census has reflected or maybe even set the tone for how we categorize people in the U.S. based on race and other factors. And Pew has looked at how that has evolved over the years. So in 1790, there were just a few categories: free white males and females, other free persons, and slaves. By this year, 2020, the categories have changed and expanded considerably. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. We have a great interactive visualization on our website, pewresearch.org, that tells you census by census what the categories were and explains a little bit about why some of these changes were made. But, race has been on every census form since the beginning in 1790. And the changing in categories reflect both changes in the population, the underlying population, as well as changing attitudes in society and science about racial and ethnic categorization. So as you said, there were only really black and white categories on the first census, because that was mainly what this nation was in terms of people who were counted. Of course, there were plenty of Native Americans, but they weren't included in society, so to speak, or the government base, so they weren't counted.
Yeah, they don't show up until they don't show up until 1860 in terms of being counted.
Right. The mid 1800s, and not fully so, and really until future decades. There was a distinction made between Native Americans on reservations versus those who were more quote unquote integrated into white society. Similarly, the first time you see an Asian American category is in 1870, when Chinese pops up on the form, and because as you in California know, there were lots more Chinese arriving in the United States for work, including on the railroads in California, but also elsewhere. So there was felt to be a need to count that group. The black and white categories fluctuated a lot over time as population scientists wanted to try to do some allegedly scientific, but now we know not very scientific, work on whether people of mixed race, who were both black and white, how their standing compared with people who were only black versus those who are only white. So there was a lot of preoccupation with making sure that the white category was only for people who were totally white and had not, as it were, a single drop of black blood. In any event, these categories evolved over time. The first mention of Hispanic on the census was in 1970 for a sample of the population, and then fully for all people in 1980. And then one other date that's important is 1960. You know, for most of our history, the census was done by enumerators, people going door to door and filling out the forms on behalf of the government and writing down information about people, but making certain decisions about them, including their race.
Oh.
But from 1960 on, people could decide their own racial category.
So,
and this has had a big impact.
I want to make sure I understand this. So it was not, somebody didn't come to the door and say, what race are you? And then they checked that box. They looked at you and summed up what you were and then checked that box.
Well, I wasn't there for those censuses, so
right.
I can't say for sure, but you know, there's certainly the understanding that the census taker was the one who knew that person, knew how that person was perceived in the community. And in fact, there were quite detailed instructions to census takers about how to classify people.
Oh.
For example, if somebody was seen one way in the community but might actually be something else, the community standing might be the one that won out in the form. So that, you know, if you're into history, as I am, of the census, it's kind of fascinating to read these instructions over time. But yes, the census takers were the ones who made the decision, and often they were people from their own community, so they knew who everybody was.
And you said that changed in 1960, that's when people made their own determinations?
Yes, and it was part of a larger shift in census taking to having people fill out their own forms rather than having census takers come to the door.
Mm.
As the country grew, self-response got to be a bigger part. So now you are who you say you are. And in fact, there's some fascinating research that some people change their racial self-identification from one census to another. Now, along with this ability to decide for yourself who you are, there's been a growing consensus among scholars that race is not a biological determined thing, but more something a concept that reflects how society or individuals perceive it.
Mm-hmm. What? So I do want to. You mentioned that Hispanic showed up on the census in 1970. The chart here shows it might have showed up for one time in 1930 as well. But I'm curious about this Hispanic Latino category, and then it goes to the race question. How is it that that's separated on the census?
Yeah, that's a good question. So first people are asked, are you Hispanic or Latino or other Spanish origin? And then you're asked for your race. And that has been a real conundrum for many Latinos who end up checking a box called some other race to describe their race. That's about the second most popular choice among Latinos when it comes to the race question. And it reflects what the Census Bureau has said is a feeling among many Hispanics that they don't really see themselves on the census form. So the Bureau experimented with combining the two questions. They tested this out quite thoroughly over the decade between 2010 and 2020. And they found that if you just include Hispanic along with the racial categories, and you don't require Latinos to check a racial category, that many, if not most of them, will not check a racial category, that Latino or Hispanic is how they see their race, origin, culture, and self-identity.
Mm-hmm. We just spoke with someone from the Census Bureau who says in order for that to get changed, it's up to the Census Bureau to do that.
Not quite on that. She was absolutely right that it is the Census Bureau and the Commerce Department over it that decides which questions get on the form. But the racial and ethnic categories, this really gets nerdy, but give me just
a
couple seconds.
We love to nerd out here. So
do you?
How about it? Yes.
There's a federal office called the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, which is actually part of the executive branch in the White House, that has the final say in everything that's asked on federal surveys, especially particularly racial and ethnic categorization. So any changes that are made to those overall categories and modes of asking the question would be changes throughout the federal survey system. And so the OMB kind of coordinates it. So the Census Bureau did put this possible change before OMB, about combining the two questions, and it was never acted upon after the new administration took office. So it's sitting out there. Nothing's happened with it.
Even though the testing that was done over the decade showed that it would increase the response rate.
That it would, yes, increase in general the response rate to that combined racial and ethnic question, yes.
The terminology used also has changed, specifically when it comes to African Americans. Is that just a cultural reflection?
Yes. This census, the word Negro was dropped from the form because it was seen as very old-fashioned. The Bureau held on to it because it said that its test showed that some people, especially some older respondents, felt that that was the word that best described them. But after 2010, I think the negative response to that word outgrew the positive impacts of it, and so it was dropped.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, I asked this question of the woman from the Census Bureau. Some people argue that you really could get a more accurate and reflective look at the United States if you just did random sampling, that you get so many errors when you try to count every single person. Has Pew looked into that at all?
Well, the big problem with that is we need the census to give us the basic profile of the population in order to know what a true random sample is. So unless you have an accurate count of how many people are age one, age two, age three, all the way up, and then male and female and the different racial groups, the main categories that were used to construct the population, you don't know whether when you have pull your random sample, whether it accurately reflects the population mix as a whole, and you need to do that. So as a survey organization, we're very dependent on the Census Bureau to give us an accurate picture of the overall population so that we can make sure our surveys accurately reflect that distribution.
Right, right. So federal courts have permanently blocked the Trump administration from adding to the 2020 census the question of, is this person a citizen of the United States? What's the history of asking citizenship on the census?
Well, before I do that, let me throw in a little something from our own research. We did some surveys of to ask people what they knew about the census. And when we did those surveys, both in January and then again in late February, early March, we found that only a small minority of adults knew that there was no citizenship question on the census.
Oh,
was just under 20% knew correctly that there wasn't one. Most either thought it there was or were not sure. Citizenship has been asked on and off on the census. The last time that it was asked, it was only asked, I believe, of the foreign born, and that was in 1950. Since then, it has been asked on the Census Bureau's American Community Survey, which came along in the 2000s to supply a lot more detail that formerly was asked on the census long form, but it has not been asked or had not been asked on the census as a whole since 1950.
Devera Cohn, she's a senior writer and editor at Pew Research Center. Devera, I have to say that might be the most informative census conversation I've ever had.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, thank you.
No, you just had some really great information in there, and I appreciate you being part of Insight today. Thank you.
And thanks for having me.
And you are listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm Randall White, and we'll be back in just a moment to talk about how your sexuality and your race may play into the census and whether you take it or not and whether you, you know, like the questions that are on it. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and the U.S. Census Bureau is cutting short all counting efforts for the 2020 census on September 30th, an entire month sooner than previously announced. And that means an end to the process of critical door knocking and the collection of responses online through the mail and by phone. In fact, there's 500,000 people heading out to your door today if you haven't already taken or filled out your census form. The Latino population makes up more than 18% of the U.S. population, according to the most recent data, almost one in five people. Safety concerns may cause some of those living in the U.S. while undocumented to skip filling out the census form, despite the fact that there is no citizenship question, which we pointed out in the last segment. Here to talk about this is Christian Arana, the policy director for the Latino Community Foundation. And Christian, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So what is the biggest concern for Latinos when it comes to filling out the census?
Well, where do I begin with that one? There are several, but I think what you just mentioned would probably rise to the very top. This question of, you're asking me to fill out this form, and how exactly are you going to use this information? This is a concern that even preceded the whole debacle over the citizenship question. I always like to say that even for American citizens who are born in this country, they too often forget what the census is and why it matters. So you can only imagine undocumented populations who don't necessarily have exposure to these big civic events. You're asking them to fill out their personal information and to send it to the federal government. So obviously the natural question is, well, who exactly is going to have this information and what are they going to do with it?
I have to admit that I even thought about that as I was filling it out, you know. So your job then, or at least one of the jobs of the Latino Community Foundation, is to get out there and say, no, it is important that you fill it out, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we are actually one of the lead contractors on behalf of the state of California conducting outreach and education to the Latino community in the state. So what we've done specifically as a philanthropic organization, we've invested in youth serving organizations that are led by Latinos. We're very intentional about that because coming off of the 2018 midterm elections, we saw a huge increase in voter participation among young Latinos. Going into the census, we knew that this was going to be the first online census. So actually, who better to have families, to help out their families fill out this form online, and who can better handle those questions around confidentiality, privacy, how to actually fill out the form. So these young people who are engaged and who want to continue to be engaged, you know, we were trying to make sure that those people, those trusted messengers on the ground, would be able to lead those discussions with their families to say, it's actually okay to participate in this thing called the census, because at the end of the day, it means political representation and federal dollars for our communities.
How did your, so I imagine you had a plan going into this, because the census doesn't pop up out of nowhere. We know about it
yeah,
like
exactly.
10 years in advance. So I assume you had a plan going into it, and like so many other things in 2020, it got upended because of COVID. So what were you going to do, and how are you doing it now?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So because of the pandemic, we've now had to adjust all of our outreach virtually. So, you know, we're very thankful that we have a very large social media following between Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So any opportunities that we can get to take this message online, we're doing it. Because of the pandemic, unfortunately, like a lot of our events were meant to be in person. Because at the end of the day, you know, while digital outreach is very important to just, you know, hammer the message about what this is and why it matters, people really need those in-person conversations, and especially conversations with people that they trust, right? I think despite the pandemic, I'm very proud to report that these groups that we've invested in that I mentioned earlier, they've adjusted well. So even though, you know, they practice social distancing, they maintain all the guidance. One of our groups down in Imperial County, one of the worst counties hit by COVID-19,
right.
What they've done actually is they planned car caravans across hard to count communities. And what they do is that they hold these census signs and they honk their horns and people come out of their houses. And naturally, you know, 6 feet away, they ask the question, like, what are you honking for? And those occasions are used to continue the education. So, you know, we're
that's one way to go about it, I guess.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, and I'll just share very quickly. I mean, we also know that schools are also being used as places to distribute food and other services. Our nonprofits on the ground are actually working with local school districts so that if you're a family that needs to pick up food, like it is also the opportunity to pick up more information about the census and more guidance on what it is and how to fill it out.
So, Christian, info that's put on the form cannot be used by ICE, correct?
Yeah. So what I always say is that this information cannot be used by ICE. Not even Donald Trump himself can type in your name into a system and find you. Right.
Uh-huh. And it would take an act of Congress to change that.
Which at this point, the United States Congress is never, ever going to do that, given how political things are today.
Right. So despite all the problems with COVID-19, you're pretty close to hitting 2010 participation rates.
Yeah, so I actually checked yesterday. So I think we're a little over 64%. The 2010 participation rate for California was at 68%. So despite everything, despite the pandemic, despite this latest move by the Trump administration, despite the fact over the fight over the citizenship question, we are very close to achieving the 2010 rate. And I think that's a huge testament to the fact that our nonprofit partners have been working on this for the last 3 years. Philanthropy, the sector that I work in, I'm actually one of the co-chairs of the Census Funders Group of philanthropic institutions who have been mobilizing around the census. We started very early. We've started since 2017 to strategize and figure things out. So I think if we're able to hit the 2010 rate, which I am confident that we will, it will be a success because despite all the obstacles, philanthropy stepped up, nonprofits stepped up. I would even say Governor Newsom and Governor Brown before him they allocated funding to make sure that the state had sufficient funds to make sure that there's a fair and accurate count of all Californians.
And Christian, your group finally here wants to push Congress to extend the counting until the end of October?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about what happened recently with the Trump administration, they basically said, all right, everyone, you got to wrap it up at the end of September. We know that despite the fact that we're very close to the 2010 rate, the goal should and always should be 100%. You know, all of us deserve to be counted because we know that it means political representation and federal resources for our local schools, hospitals, roads, like you name it, right? So we think it's unjust and unfair that the Trump administration is cutting it short. And this is an opportunity for Congress to act. Under the leadership of Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, the HEROES Act actually already included language about extending the count to the end of October. Oh. The Senate proposal by Senator Mitch McConnell under the HEALS Act does not. So in the midst of these negotiations that are happening, I would say hopefully in the next couple of weeks, because Americans of all backgrounds need Congress to act, I do hope that they include language to actually extend the count, because at the end of the day, it's a failed census fails the entire country.
I didn't realize the census date was tied into both of the, you know, the Senate's version and the House of Representatives version. So that's interesting. Christian yeah. Arana, Policy Director for the Latino Community Foundation. Thank you so much. I appreciate you giving us that perspective this morning.
Thank you so much.
Here in Sacramento, the LGBT Community Center is also in the middle of its campaign to get people to take the census. The center is parallel conducting its own queer census in order to collect data and hopefully spark a change in the questions asked by the census in the future. Joining us now to talk about these efforts is Judah Jocelyn. He's the center's Outreach and Training Institute Director. Judah, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So this queering the census, what sort of questions do you want to see on the census that aren't there now?
Well, you know, we would really like to see questions that involve gender identity, right? The questions that are on there are just about your sex at birth. And that's really not inclusive or validating for a lot of people in our community. And so it's really important to get that representation out there of the whole spectrum of, you know, the queer community, the LGBTQ community. They have one question related to, you know, how you're married, you know, if you're in a same-sex relationship, but that's not necessarily representative of everybody within our community.
That is an advancement, though, over the years.
It is definitely an advancement, but, you know, one of the things that happens when we're filling out the U.S. Census for some people in our community is it can be incredibly painful to not feel like you're being represented, to not be able to actually put your identity on there. And so it gets really, it can be really harmful. And so we want to make sure that, you know, people have the opportunity to fill out the census because it is vital. It is important. We need these, you know, this money for our communities. But we also want to make sure that it's not doing any undue harm in the process.
So I recently reached out to the center in Sacramento to ask them if they had a count of the percentage of the population that identifies as LGBTQ plus. And they said those numbers are really hard to come by because, you know, some of the data is old or it's flawed. Is this effort not for, you know, changing questions on future census, but this other effort, this parallel census that the center wants to get out there, is that an effort to get some pretty solid numbers?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not just our center and it's centers all across the country, right? There are queer censuses all across the country happening right now so that we can collect all of this data and get a better sense of what our populations look like. And historically, we've been undercounted with everything. COVID-19, they weren't collecting data. You know, they just don't collect data on us. And so this is a really good opportunity to get a better count of who we are and what kinds of representation we need, and just continue to push to get us represented in the country.
So this is a concerted effort then. You, the center in Sacramento, along with several throughout the country. Who's funding that? Because it can't be inexpensive to get forms out to every person, you know, to find out how they identify.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not sure how other people are funding theirs, but we certainly have taken opportunities to use whatever funding we can find through our grants and through the census work to make sure that we're providing opportunities. And ours is specifically online, so we don't have a lot of paper copies, but we do make sure that everybody has access in multiple languages. So we're really trying to get the word out there about it so that our community can feel like they're being represented.
Judah, are you getting questions from the community in relationship to the current U.S. Census form asking, hey, I really don't want to identify as any of the things that are presented to me here? And if so, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, we get those questions all the time. And, you know, for a while it was, you know, answer it to the best of your ability, whatever you feel comfortable with. But I think it's really important that we get the message out there that it is your right to not answer every question on there. And, you know, the online version of the census is a bit harmful in the sense that you answer the question or you skip the question and then it repeatedly asks you to answer the question. You can bypass that by clicking next over and over and over again. But that process of being forced or feeling like you're being forced to answer a very binary question when you're not a binary individual, right, is incredibly harmful. So we really have been encouraging people to, you know, do their best when they're answering the census, take care of themselves when they're doing it, and, you know, answer the questions that they feel comfortable with and don't answer the questions that they don't, mm-hmm. but take it.
Yeah, we've on this show, we've heard from the Latino community and other experts who explain why filling out the census is important. From the LGBTQ plus perspective, why is it important?
Well, a lot of our community programs rely on that money. And the reality is we may not be being represented the best way possible at this point with the questions, but we are still being represented. And I think it's really important for our community to show up and fill out the census so that we can continue to have that funding and that, you know, the representation that we need come flowing into our communities. So it's still very important. And I, you know, I always tell people, I know it's uncomfortable, but you have to fill it out. It is so important.
Mm-hmm. Judah, 10 years from now, 2030, in your ideal world, what questions would you like to see and which questions would you not want to see?
Well, I would definitely like to see some gender identity questions. I think that is a better representation of humans in general, not just our community, but, you know, rather than sex questions, we can talk about gender identity.
So not necessarily a question about orientation?
I mean, orientation is, you know, a really great way to be represented as well. We definitely need to broaden it out because, you know, orientation, just like gender, is a spectrum. And just having, you know, are you, you know, married couple, same sex couple, does not represent our community. It does not see the full spectrum of who we are and the kinds of relationships that we have.
And if you're not married, then there's no way to represent that on the current
exactly.
census form, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I filled out my census and I basically feel like I did not get represented at all. As a trans man, I'm a proud trans man. Just saying that I'm a man doesn't represent who I am at all or my interests as a human being or as a citizen of this nation. Okay. So it's really important that we get a more in-depth census so that we can actually represent who we are and we can feel comfortable being represented.
All right. Judah Jocelyn, he's the Sacramento LGBTQ Center's Outreach and Training Institute Director. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And that is Insight for today. I'm Randall White with producer Kyle McKinnon and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. The producer who was the driving force behind today's show is Cynthia Lopez. And here she is, with our last minute insight.
You may think of Arden Arcade, Carmichael, and Orangevale as suburbs of Sacramento. But these towns aren't actually towns or cities. They're census-designated places, or CDPs. You may have seen CDP signs around these areas, but what is a census-designated place? Well, areas like Antelope and Orangevale are unincorporated areas that have settlements of people who have built up a population enough that they have been given a name, but aren't actually incorporated as cities. These areas are all over the country, let alone California. The Census Bureau sees that there's a cluster of people in a certain area and draws its own border around that population to put a name to the data, so to speak. I'm Cynthia Lopez, producer and your director for Insight today.
East LA, by the way, is the largest place, CDP, in California, population-wise. Thanks also to technical director Mark Jones for today. Engineer is Antonio Munez. The Insight Digital team, Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Chris Vera Phillips. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you right back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.